the races with Steve Bick.
And off.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Churchill Downs, still Monday after Oaks Derby weekend. A very good morning, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com, and a whole lot to dive into and to recap. It'll take, as it always does, several days. And I'm pretty convinced that this new model for staying here after Derby, I think, is going to become a regular occurrence, because it much more relaxed, much less insane, and ready to actually have some in persons over here, including the Mage connections, Ramiro Restopo and Gustavo Delgado Jr. At 10 o'clock will join us. And there's obviously some serious and some difficult discussions to have about, you know, the continuing problem that has confronted Churchill, and with certain segments, obviously, of the public overshadowing the race results, and specifically the Derby performance and performances. And it's obviously a major problem, and there's no avoiding it. And in fact, I can tell you that in doing recaps, yeah, and even before the recaps on other channels here on the network, it was in some cases, actually, I think I did three spots Friday and or Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then a recap. It spent more time, you know, talking about the incidents and the fatalities as we did, you know, the Derby itself. And clearly the public isn't going to understand, you know, the intricacies and the complexities like, you know, those of us that are immersed in the game, immersed in whatever capacity we are. So it's incumbent, as it's been in the wake of previous sets of circumstances where these scenarios have to be confronted and explained. So that's part of the recapping. I think for, you know, those of us and those of you that are tuned in and, you know, looking forward to, you know, the happy recaps, there'll be plenty of that. And that continued, you know, the game presses on, and that's really the only the way it can, you know, can move. There's no, you know, there's no stopping what everyone does and what everyone's, you know, obligations are. In a very, you know, simple term, before we go into the results. The reality is that the horizon view that all of us are aware of and that we discuss and report regularly, the industry has done a outstanding job cutting fatalities essentially in half in 10 or so years, and on a par and on a level with, you know, international racing. And there's never going to be, you know, zero incidents or zero fatalities per 1,000 starts. It's never going to hit zero. And so trying to assuage people's demands and, you know, calls for ending racing, you're not going to ever be able to satisfy that crowd. What we can hopefully satisfy through explanation and, constant attention to, safety and inspection of horses in preparation for their athletic endeavor. We can only just continue to do what we've been doing, and everyone, including, the teams that were turned away and were scratched out of not just the Derby, not just Forte and those that came out, before Saturday, everyone has to accept it, and everyone has to understand. In fact, Brendan Walsh is going to join us. Brendan Walsh, a couple of years ago, lost two horses that way to, to the vets at the Breeders' Cup. So that's just going to be the path forward. And there's some nuance to that discussion, which we can have as well, including the competency of the inspection teams, the regulatory vets. It's a legitimate question. I mean, Todd Pletcher versus the opinion of a regulatory vet that's a functionaire. A prominent horseman made an interesting analogy that I had never heard and hadn't really occurred to me, equating the regulatory vets with public defenders. That not to take away from the work of public defenders, which is honorable, but this point is actually valid. So that's a complex discussion to have as part of the postscript to the weekend and to that path forward. But in terms of what we were treated to in terms of racing, the Derby in particular and the Oaks, but so many of the other stakes races particularly, were exactly what, you're looking for. You had two finishes in the Derby and the Oaks that were, absolutely thrilling. Pretty mischievous on Friday, withstanding a late charge from Gambling Girl, Mage, confronting and vanquishing an incredibly valiant two fills. And those four horses, the two fillies and the two colts, they just stood out. The boys, and we'll talk to Andy Beyer in about 10 minutes, the traditional Andy Beyer first voice up conversation you'll be surprised by, because Andy was surprised by the 105 figure that he came up with. And I got to tell you, he must have worked on it. He worked on it until mid-morning yesterday. Very frequently, the Derby fig will come up by 8 o'clock at night, 8:39. Andy, I'm sure that Andy and Mark Hopkins, maybe Randy Moss, Dick Girardi, I've got a feeling everybody put their heads together, because when I talked to Andy last, yesterday, he said he was surprised how fast the race came up. And the Phillies stayed right where they belong, it seems, 92 for Pretty Mischievous. But the boys elevated their game, and the 105, Mage, just so impressive. The same rally from the back that we've seen, the pace. I tried to warn everybody. The maintaining that the pace was going to be just average made no sense, especially with the addition of Cyclone Mischief. It shouldn't have come as any surprise that you had essentially what became a collapse pace. And we'll let Ramiro and Gustavo Jr., talk about the race from their perspective. The first reaction that I had, aside from the the personal greed standpoint of having having needed two fills for a truckload, was that Javier Castellano had won his Derby. And as happy as we are for everybody involved, the Delgado team, what looks like a fabulous staff of grooms and the whole team was out there Saturday, and then of course all the Venezuelan connections, for Hill and Dale, for Good Magic, the sire of Mage, but all of that notwithstanding, the Javier Castellano portion of this is, just delicious. Here's a Hall of Famer that had just a dismal, I think I used the word dismal last week, a dismal record in the Derby. He's 0-15 with one board hit and 1/4. And just one up the track finish after another. And plenty of those horses had no business thinking that they'd, a mile and a quarter was going to be, they were going to be effective, and that they had a big shot in the Derby. But the tie, and I'm sure that Gustavo Jr. will discuss this, the tie of the Castellano family, Javi's father, to Gustavo Delgado and his father, and the whole family. It was literally a family win. It was like Casey's shadow in Spanish. I'll let that one resonate. The portion of Meja's victory as a horse making a fourth start, that's a tribute to Delgado and his approach. You know, the culture, I think it's Argentina, right? That's the culture of the gaucho, but the horsemanship culture, and as was discussed in the post race press conference and Dave Greinig's recap, Delgado's ability to build stamina and get a horse to settle, and then the approach, which was, you know, if he doesn't break sharp, you know, what do we do? And Javi explained, we'll get Javi this week, that they had established that if he didn't break, just to let him settle, gain some position, save ground, and pick off horses as needed. And that's what they did. And a masterful ride by Javier Castellano to get what has been an elusive stripe on his Hall of Fame uniform. Meanwhile, Two Phils and Jareth Loveberry and Larry Ravelli and that team ran one of the best races in defeat in the race's history, and immediately invoked thoughts of Congaree and more recently of Bodemeister. It to run that way, to attend the pace, and all you have to do is look at the chart. We discuss this all the time. Look at the chart. Look at the horses that were involved, the top five horses for the first quarter, the first half mile, into the third quarter. They finished 16th, 14th, 13th, and 10th. And Two Phils was beaten a length. That's what you need to know. This was just an amazing effort. And if you haven't watched the replay, I've watched it maybe six or seven times, and every time you watch, you know, you're watching different horses, you're trying to pick up all the, you know, all the trouble, and there was plenty of trouble. There were some horses, I mean, as always, we're always surprised by how cleanly the Derby is typically run. And, you know, there's going to be bumping. I mean, there's just too many horses for there not to be some, you know, some issues here and there. But relatively, you know, incident free. But this was a huge effort. And when you watch the replay of Two Phils, first of all, the overhead, you'll see Jareth Loveberry makes a move to get past a tiring verifying and knifes through at a very difficult portion of the turn. And as we had discussed, Two Phils in two jumps. I mean, the explosiveness of him when asked. And the minute he hit the front, his ears went up, and I mean, even, you know, I watch from the infield Saturday, which I do every so often, and it, you know, you watch, you're looking live down the stretch, and I actually got a decent little video clip, and then you watch, you know, you look up at the big board, and you see his ears go up, a good sign, boy, and I thought, oh my God, he's gonna take them the length of the stretch, and then it became clear that Meja, you know, was just relentlessly approaching, and they collar. Loveberry did all he could. I applaud Jareth Loveberry for bringing Two Phils from the two path out to about the three and a half to confront Meja, so that, you know, Two Phils could eyeball him, and they stayed together for, you know, a few more jumps, and then you know, Meja's momentum carried him past and to a terrific victory. Angel of Empire pretty much, you know, came late was outkicked by Mage, and was a nice third. Disarm ran the good race that we kind of had anticipated. We thought was coming from him. We'll talk about who's heading to Baltimore, and right now it looks like a very nice group heading to Baltimore. There's obviously tons here to dive into and dig out. Pretty mischievous. Yes, Gambling Girl was getting to her, but I mean she was spectacular. She just you want to see a vision. How about Tyler Gaffalione coming around the turn motionless on Pretty Mischievous with everybody else scrubbing? It was clear what was going to happen there. One of the best parts of the Friday story, Phil Bauer, and he's going to join us this morning. Just spectacular for him and Mr. Rigney. Played hard. Just spectacular. Johnny V. They win the La Troyenne. And the biggest win, obviously, of Bauer's career. And so we'll look forward to talking to Phil. Rusty Arnold, clever turn back with red carpet ready. And beats Money's Gold, who ran okay. There was a bunch of things that we're gonna have to really dig through. There was Shug on Saturday, General Jim, big win for Don Adam. That was great. How about another Friday Saturday for the Green family? I don't know if it's something that they want to continue. Wonder Wheel on Friday doesn't run well, and then they turn around and win on Saturday. But they had flown home. They did it at Keeneland. So maybe it's a system. Web Slinger with a very good effort after the troubled trip last time. Javi Castellano getting that win earlier on the card. There is, in that American Turf, of course, there's another scratch story that was very difficult to, at the time, understand. Frankly, I think Shug and Reeve McGahee still don't understand it because the vets at the gate scratch talk of the nation, and as far as they're concerned, Tyler Gaffalione said there wasn't any problem warming up, and he didn't say anything. He didn't get to the gate and say, "I don't like the way he feels." I was on the air, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. I got a lot of thank yous to met out, but I was looking for a final odds update, and I see Talk of the Town is crossed out on the odds board. I'm looking down. I said, when did this happen? And it had to have happened literally as they were behind the gate. And because apparently even the NBC crew on air was taken by surprise. I mean, they literally were getting in the gate when it became apparent that Talk of the Town was not going to be part of the field. So, and then there was plenty of scurrying going on to try to figure out what exactly was the problem. And I followed it up on Saturday. We'll talk to Shug, obviously, about General Jim's victory in the Pat Day Mile. Larry Ravelli, looking forward to talking to Larry as well, because Nobles wins the Turf Sprint. And that was clever. Went to the front and just ran away. Gerardo Corrales, a big win for him. And so Ravelli and his team, not a bad day. They win a stake and finish second in the Derby. And literally were 250 yards from potentially a two-win day. I said that to Ravelli pre-Derby. I said, it's not often you get to win two races on Derby Day. The Cody's Wish, always a spirit lifter. Matt Araya, we got to talk about the Derby City Distaff. And Arad Ortiz getting his knuckles wrapped, like I said yesterday with Seth Mero, like a nun at a parochial school with a ruler. Absolutely schooled by his rivals in a six-horse field, five horses. There was him and five others. Matt Araya, the beneficiary. Big weekend, by the way, for Godolphin, who wins, Cody, obviously, Pretty Mischief, and Matt Araya. And then, let's win the Fort Marcy, too. With Ottoman, Ottoman Fleet, I think, yesterday at Belmont. So four stake wins for them. Anyway, so much here to chew on. Caravelle, of course, another win. I mean, she should have been 5 cents to the dollar. Smile Happy. How about Smile Happy in the Ali Sheba? Huge performance. Brian Hernandez Jr. and McPeak. They had a lot of chances together over the weekend. A couple of good efforts, but this was 110 buyer, too, by the way. Mammoth effort. So, is that everything? Fluffy Socks. Nice win for Fluffy Socks, the slumber mare for Chad, and I ran aboard for Sal Cumin. And, of course, Sal bought into Two Fills last week, and so they had fun. I mean, Sal and his part, all the partners, the different assemblies that he's got. And then there's Up to the Mark, by the way. They should slip that in the old Forrester Turf Classic, who got bet like they had already run the race, and dominated. I that was such a curious, I think we all kind of felt it was a curious bunch, and we were trying to figure out a way to get clever in there. There was no getting clever. The favorite was just, what did he win by? Six lengths? Five lengths? He just buried that bunch. So it looks like he's stepping forward to Son of Not This Time. And that was the, I guess, a consolation prize for the Pletcher team and the Rapoli team. Although finishing second in the Oaks, not so bad either. But Forte, right now, he's going to work here. He's on the backstretch, and he's going to work here. And they're going to aim for the Preakness. And if everybody that seems to be going to Preakness goes, it's going to be very fun. It's going to be a very good group. We'll go over that in a little bit. Right now, let me get Andy in here and get going. Andy Beyer is going to join us. And then Team Mage, which they'll be here live. So we're looking forward to that. And we'll get the whole story told. The outpouring. Ramiro Restopo has been very, very well known even before this horse rose to prominence with that 7-furlong maiden win at Gulfstream on the Pegasus card. It turned out to be, it seemed like it was a highlight at the time, and turns out to be very much a highlight. And I think his outgoing personality, it's so many people delighted for him, and he picked the horse out. So we'll hear the whole story, front, middle, and back, as it heads toward Baltimore. He's also going to stay here until next week, and everybody came out good. The Japanese horses are going home, and everybody, international race, international racing, yep, except Venezuela, not Japan. I'm sorry, I can't help myself. And we can go back to that maxim about waiting until one of those horses beats us before we worry about them. Again, Andy Beyer, as always, the first voice you hear post Derby on this show for many, many years. Andy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
We always look forward to this, and there actually is more than just the on-racetrack conversation to have, but let's start with the racetrack. Let's start with the feature, and I loved how surprised you were by the number that you came up with for Mage.
Well, the... this was a number that inspired a lot of discussion among me and my colleagues. Normally, if a if we make a figure and it comes up extremely high or low, relative to the way the horses have been running in the past, I always immediately suspect that there was some aberration in the track or the timer. And of the top five horses and finishers in the Derby, leaving aside two fills who'd run well on synthetic, nobody had run a figure higher than 94, and so for the race to earn a figure of 105 seemed a little implausible to me. I've discussed this a great length with my partner Mark Hopkins, and and our ace fig maker Randy Moss, and what we observed, what Randy argued on this, was that the Churchill Downs track had been totally consistent on Friday and Saturday. We had the exact same track variant for every stakes race. And so the fact that the track had not been changing, there was no evident aberration anywhere in 2 days. We decided that we had to take the evidence at face value. Do I believe that Mage and Company really ran as fast as American Pharoah when he won the Derby? I don't know. We're certainly going to be watching the Preakness with interest to see what kind of numbers these horses earn when they run back. But based on the evidence that we've got, I have to say that this group of horses may have been a lot better than most people, including me, thought.
On that portion, was there anything in the prep races and in the paths that they took? Because one of the valuable tools for those of you that have got DRF formulator at your disposal, if you look at the interactive charts, one of the things you can do is pull up the buyers. I'll put this on Twitter, and so you see the buyer progression or regression when that occurs. You can see it in very clear terms, and obviously in a race like the Derby, Andy, there's going to be horses that are way up the track, and horses like Rocket Can and Raise Kane and maybe Tap It Trice as sort of a foundation or a base level. Even Hit Show, who ran a career best 98. I mean, I know when you see numbers and that every single horse in the top quarter of the chart ran a career best, that raises an alarm bell.
It is, and I looked at the and when I looked at the form of the top finishers and particularly the winner, I mean, I wasn't smart enough to anticipate wow, they're about to make a great step forward and run a terrific race. Mage had only three career starts, no racing at two, the kind of light campaign that never succeeds in the Derby. I think I said somewhere he can't be in the top 10. He obviously ran a terrific race. We'll see as these horses continue to run whether this 105 really pointed out a very good crop of horses, or whether there was some aberration that we don't understand.
Well, and I suppose that part of that equation can also be that, here's the 10 furlong demarcation, and I'm just looking at the top you know, the top finishers, and we're looking at Good Magic, Hardspun, Classic Empire, Gunrunner, and Candy Ride are the sires of the top five finishers. And so that's interesting in itself, actually, that the diversity. But I've been maintaining that we're breeding more route going horses, and this is the classic trip. So these next 5 weeks are going to be very interesting. And in terms of performances, what else were you taken with? You and I talked the other day, and the pace ends up being another collapse style pace, with only two fills really attending the pace and staying on. You end up with Mage and Angel of Empire closing stoutly into the pace.
Excuse me, I was just distracted there.
That's all right.
The horses who were on the lead were horses who were not going to be there at the finish anyway, and the fact that two fills got a nice stocking trip, and the pace didn't destroy him. He got kind of the trip that I wanted my horse Dermasota Gaki to get, and I was just unhappy with the way the race turned out for him, and the way the jockey approached the race. I mean, Chris LeMaire should have known that the Dermasota Gaki ran the race of his life when he won the UAE Derby on the lead, and that being on or near the lead should have been his aim. But I saw him interviewed twice before the Derby when he talked about was his ride in 2022 on the Japanese horse who vied for the lead and collapsed. And he said, I didn't realize how fast I was going. I'm not going to make that same mistake again. So he went into the race not committed to letting Dermasota Gaki show his speed. And then he had it was hard to gauge exactly what happened, but he didn't get out of the gate properly and never got in it. I was not happy about losing this bet in this way.
Andy, speaking of two fills, got John White actually sent me an interesting question, and I was a little surprised too. The chart margin ends up being a length between Mage and two fills, and you gave 105s to both horses, and then a 104 to Angel of Empire.
When you're dealing with small fractions, there will just the way the fractions are rounded off will sometimes create kind of a 1 point what looks like an aberration. I mean, sometimes you'll have a case where two horses are within a nose of each other, and then one horse gets a point higher. It's just there's nothing wrong there. Just somewhere the numbers have to be rounded off, and go from like a 90. There's a particular time where a figure is going to go up by to the next highest point, and so there's nothing funny about it.
And I'm just looking for it from yesterday because I was asked, and I went to, I've only got an old version of the beaten lengths adjustment chart. The thing is literally 20 years old, and I know you've adjusted this, but somebody had a question. I want to make sure I've got the right horse that he asked about. Well, who was it? He said it was somebody that was six lengths back, maybe Hitcho. Yeah, I think it was. I think he asked about Hitcho getting a 90. It looks like I thought it was a 7-point spread, so a 98 maybe for Hitcho. Yeah, I think that's right. A 98 for Hitcho, beaten 6.5 or 6.75 lengths. And
let me just interrupt you.
Yeah.
Our beaten length calculations are a little more subtle and sophisticated now than they were when I wrote Picking Winners in 1975, and so don't don't look at the chart in the book and expect to to see that beaten links
correspond
exactly reflected.
All right, I don't want to give anybody a chance to say, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, because that's not the case here. Is it something that is worth publishing? Is it something that is that the public? It might be a useful reference tool actually for the public to help them understand. Or is it part of the sausage being made that stays proprietary?
I mean, it's not that big a deal, but it's proprietary.
I got you. All right.
It's just complex. It does not fit into a neat little chart.
Gotcha. Andy, a couple of things too I want to bring up. Some other portions of the weekend, the Phillies, the Philly winner, we'll talk to Brendan Walsh in a little bit. The Philly winner was really quite good, but not much faster than the best Phillies have been running.
Yeah, nobody was quite good in that race. I mean, this was just a shockingly poor set of figures in this group, and winning with a 92 is not all that impressive. I just thought the Oaks was really a disappointing race this year.
Andy, one of the big dialogue and discussion points, obviously, just challenging and troubling series of injuries and fatalities that occurred through Saturday. And I tried to explain this Saturday night on Mad Dog Radio. It's a wide variety of different things. I mean, turf, dirt, paddock. I mean, it seems like a cluster that is going to be next to impossible to tie together, but two of the some of the derby discussion also involves the scratches of the Safi Joseph horses, and from your perspective, and if you were writing a column, and we sure would love you to be writing columns, you and Steve Crist, What's your off the racetrack point of view?
Well, during this horrible week, which was very bad for the thoroughbred industry. I mean, seven horses died at Churchill Downs, and let's say that there are always going to be injuries in horse racing, and some fatalities, and the sport has done a good job of reducing the incidence of horses' deaths. I mean, the statistics are actually pretty encouraging. And so five of the horses who died from, from clear stress injuries, that we'll see in horse racing, knees going 40 miles an hour are certainly vulnerable. And, you know, it is, you know, I don't think we can know whether these events at Churchill happened for some kind of unifying reason or whether it was just a random distribution of bad events. I mean, I hope Churchill will, you know, undertake a serious study and, you know, and try to find an answer. I mean, from what we saw, just doing the figures on how uniform the track was for 2 days, I gotta think the track maintenance crew did a really professional job, and I really doubt that that the racetrack was to blame. But the other two fatalities were of a different nature, and those were the two Saffy Joseph horses, both of whom, according to the reports that I read, ran, came off the track, and then just dropped dead, and perhaps from heart attacks, but it wasn't an obvious muscular skeletal injury, and that, you know, that's not supposed to happen to conditioned athletes, whether they're horses or humans. And, you know, I think that anybody who read about those deaths had to flash back to the things we learned from the trial of Jorge Navarro and Jason Service, when they were being investigated for all manner of violations. I mean, their phones were tapped, and there were sometimes, conversations that, where they talked about the horses who had died after being given, the drugs that they were using, and it was almost, sometimes seemed to be an attitude of, we killed another one. So when horses die under such, unusual conditions, it just raises suspicions. And, I think Churchill was very right to, bar Saffy Joseph from entering. We'll see what the post mortem discloses, but this is that was the aspect of the weekend's events that was I think for any racing fan should have been the most distressing one.
Well, and you'd be surprised, and I've been a little surprised by the offset side of it. I mean, obviously, plenty of people, immediately felt it was.
Steve, you're kind of breaking up on our phone line.
All right, let me see if I can't a little better.
Yeah.
All right, there we go. I've been surprised by the level of response that has said, well, how can they just summarily restrict him? They made it clear that it's pending an investigation, and that's a fairly standard business operating practice. And how could frankly, they not react prudently, given the evidence in hand. I mean, two horses with unexplained cardiac distress and fatality. How do you not respond that way? It was 100% the prudent thing to do. And frankly, I understand why Saffy Joseph would come out the way he did and say how he told Nick Luck on Saturday morning or Friday morning on Nick's show that he's done absolutely nothing wrong and he'll be vindicated. That I thought was a little over the top. The right thing to do was just pull back and out of the public eye until more is known, frankly.
Yeah, well, people who over in recent years have watched Sappy Joseph's wondrous performances as a horse trainer, you know, might feel that there are just grounds for suspicion.
Fair enough. Well, Andy, as always, appreciative of the opportunity to garner some insights.
If you've got one more minute,
yeah, of course.
One more issue I would like
Go ahead.
To discuss.
Go
and
ahead.
That is, the scratching of Fort. The racetrack and the racing community was buzzing with rumors about the favorite for two or three days. I mean, people were calling me and saying, "I hear the Forte," they would say, is going to be scratched, and nobody in Churchill or in the tracks or in the horses management really addressed the issues straightforwardly. And on Friday, when it was behind the scenes, it was obvious that a scratching was going to be possible. You know, betting opened on a multi-day bet. You know, the Oaks, the Turf Race, and the Derby. You know, $500,000 going into the pool, and nothing was made public to indicate, you know, that the favorite might be coming out of the Derby, and the comments, from Mike Rapoli, I just, you know, kind of, you know, brushed it off, he'll be galloping tomorrow. We'll be looking ahead to the Preakness. I just think everybody was trying to put the best face on it, at no time until Saturday morning did Churchill Downs give any indication that there were any issues involving the favorite in a race where people are going to be betting millions and millions of dollars. The opaqueness of around the scratch of Fort, had to make people wonder, what are they hiding? I mean, the party line now is that, oh, he'll be fine, he'll be galloping in a couple of days, he'll probably be running in the Preakness. Let's wait and see if it happens. But I just think the betting in a race like this, I mean, the betting public deserves full disclosure of what's going on.
Well, and I don't know if you had a chance to hear or if word came to you about it, Jay Privman's comments on Thursday. Jay essentially chided the KHRC for the way they were handling the vet list and the fact that they hadn't, we were 2 days, 48 hours away from the Derby, and they had a vet list that was 10, 12 days old that hadn't been updated. And then later in the day, actually, lo and behold, it was suddenly updated. In addition to there not being, real disclosure about why various horses are on the vets list. I mean, the reasonable explanation typically is vet treatments that require a 14-day stand down period, and you know, nothing nefarious per se. But again, it's a public disclosure question, and I'm probably the last guy to be invoking things like the way it's handled in other parts of the world. But a lot of times, that kind of treatment is laid out for the public, days in advance, and they can make their own determination about the horses potentially in question. The other one, Andy, that is going to bear examination this week is the way the co-favorite, essentially, or second choice, was extracted from the American turf. Literally 90 seconds before they went in the gate, talk of the nation. And Reeve and Shug McGahey are still waiting for an explanation of why the gate vets pulled the horse and scratched him at the gate.
I don't know.
Yeah, neither does Shug.
Yeah. Well, I can certainly understand Churchill Downs taking the position that we can't run any more risks. You couldn't have had a worse week of publicity, and to have to have a breakdown or something like it in one of the big races on national television, I can understand why they might bend over backwards to avoid that scenario.
That, Andy, all good points, and all areas of discussion that we count on you, and on to Baltimore, and we'll do it all again.
Okay, good to talk to you, Steve.
Andy Beyer, everybody, and Andy has been the traditional first analysis post weekend. And we had more. Actually, we had more than I expected to discuss. And I'm glad that you had further further discussion and further thoughts about the Ford scratch. That reality had been building for several days. Tuesday, Wednesday. And then it really kind of came to a head that he was going to need to pass the vet Friday and then likely on Saturday. And when he passed when nothing came out of his gallop on Friday, and he looked okay on Friday. I made the point Friday in the early stages of the show that making it known that he only went around once. And, that's a outlandish, and that, that is such a huge surprise. But he did only, he came out, went around once, and left the track. I mean, typically, they gallop and they'll come around a second time. I thought to myself, well, we'll see. And he looked just okay. He looked fine. Like a horse just, lightly galloping out there. So, when nothing happened Friday, when word didn't come Friday that, he's out, I said, all right, he's coming along. And then Saturday, the word comes. It must have been, what, about 9? Yeah, scratch time, I guess, right? Or a little bit out. I drove Mike Welch. We drove over together. So I guess it was before. Yeah, it must have maybe 8:30. I don't know. You're in such a frantic mode of getting everything done, including making changes to your picks and everything else. I am looking forward to hearing from Shug and seeing if there's anything further that they were you know, told about what they didn't like about Talk of the Nation, you know, coming up to the gate. So, I just heard from Ramiro and Gustavo. Actually, speaking of state vets, the state vet is there to, is actually at the barn right now, jogging, doing a state vet visit right now, jogging in your Derby winner, which is a mandatory 48-hour post-check, I guess. All right? So we'll see them at 10:30 instead of now. So that opens us up for Brendan Walsh. I got to see when Phil Bauer is going to pop in. All right? And we got the whole roster yet. And then, of course, we've got the regulars. We got to hear from John White and Mig. Belmont up and running Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Quite a bit of steak action. And, of course, the Peter Pan on Saturday. And horses heading to Belmont. And for those of you that are anticipating Tap It Trice as your three to five Belmont advance wager. Yeah, everybody. Tap It Trice, yeah, he is pointing toward Belmont. The, in fact, here, let me quickly, you know what, I'll quickly give you that. The non-Derby runners, of course, First Mission heads up the non-runners. And none of the other Brad Cox, they'll all bypass. But First Mission, National Treasure, and I think one of the Arabians, Arabian Knight, one of the Arabians, I think Arabian Knight. Red Route 1, of course. There's a chance now to disarm. Steve Asmussen, I spent quite a bit of time with him after Derby. And he was happy. They were happy with disarm. Chase the Chaos is under consideration. Blazing Sevens as well. Let's take a break. Hour 2 at the Races poster.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program. The best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.